Sarvabhutam Brahman Sashantim Adigachati Trayanam of the three Ekabhavanam, having one nature. Ya who Napasyate, does not see. Vai, certainly. Vidam, separateness. Sarvabhuta Atmanam, of the supersoul of all living entities. Brahman, O Daksha. Sa, he. Shantim, peace. Adigachati, realizes. Translation. The Lord continued, one who does not consider Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, or the living entities in general to be separate from the Supreme, and who knows Brahman, actually realizes peace. Others do not. Sisi Radharadhanath ki. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Two words are very significant in this verse. Trayanam indicates three, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. Bidam means different. They are three, and therefore they are separate, but at the same time they are one. This is the philosophy of simultaneous oneness and difference, which is called Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva. The example given in the Brahma Samhita is that milk and yogurt are simultaneously one and different. Both are milk, but the yogurt has become changed. In order to achieve real peace, one should see everything and every living entity, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is independent. Every one of us is an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This accounts for unity in diversity. There are diverse manifestations, but at the same time, they are one in Vishnu. Everything is an expansion of Vishnu's energy. Translation. The Lord continued, one who does not consider Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, or the living entities in general to be separate from the Supreme, and who knows Brahman, actually realizes peace. Others do not. Omigyana tamirandasya, gyana anjana shalakaya, chakshvamilitam yena tasmaya, shri gurave namaha. Shri chitanya mano vishtam stapitam yena bhutale, Swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swa padantikam. Panchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha paditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this verse is expressing the principle of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference, which is one of the essential cornerstones of the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, or of the correct understanding of reality, that everything is one with and simultaneously different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing is independent. On one hand, nothing is independent. On the other hand, nothing is absolutely one with the Supreme Lord, except other, obviously other than his personal expansions. But both features are there. Oneness is there and difference is there. And if one understands this principle clearly, then everything will fall into place. One will get the correct picture of what is this world, who am I, what is the relationship with the absolute truth, what are my duties in relation to the absolute truth. All of this becomes very clear once we have grasped this principle of Beit Abed. In fact, the word is used here, Bidan, separateness. So Beit Abed means separateness, difference, and Abed, non-difference, simultaneously. And of course that is somewhat inconceivable, a little difficult for the mind to grasp this concept. Therefore it's called Achintya, Beit Abed, Tattva, the philosophy of inconceivable, simultaneous oneness and difference with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this verse here is interesting because, particularly in this verse, the fact that oneness exists, even though apparently there's separateness, or quite clearly there is separateness, Trayana, these three, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, clearly they're existing as separate individual beings, three of them. And then of course there are all the other living entities as well. So clearly separateness is there. But this verse is saying that one should understand that oneness is there actually. One who does not consider Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva and all the living entities to be separate from the Supreme, he realizes peace and not others. So one who doesn't consider this separateness to be existing as like an absolute fact in and of itself, who understands that oneness is there, he can realize peace. So this verse is particularly stressing the oneness. And there are a number of other verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita there are also verses in which the oneness is particularly stressed, that one should be careful not to become confused by all the separation. Rather, one should understand that there is oneness underlying everything. So a number of statements like that are there. This is one. Then also, there are other statements which say that don't become confused by the oneness because separation is there, difference is there. Now, unfortunately, these two types of statements, the presence of a number of these two types of statements, has confused many people. So many people, actually, are confused. We have the well-known phenomenon of Hinduism, and in one sense we could say that Hinduism is a synonym for confusion. Of course everyone is confused, not just the Hindus, but everyone is confused. And it's also a fact that in many cases many of the Hindus tend to be less confused, but still it's a fact that much confusion is there. And a lot of that confusion has its roots in this particular apparent dilemma. The apparent dilemma that sometimes you're told, overlook the differences, just appreciate oneness. And other times you're told, don't be confused by the oneness, overlook the oneness, and focus on the difference. So what happens in fact? Of course there are two schools of thought. Those who are particularly attached to the idea of oneness and the statements which refer to the oneness. And then you have the other school which is particularly attached to the statements of difference. And they, in many ways, they'll overlook statements about the oneness. So, of course, these two schools of thought, those who are focusing on the oneness side, they're the impersonalists, and those who are focusing on the different side, they are the personalists, or the Vaishnavas, generally. And it's only in the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya that we find the correct understanding, the proper synthesis of these two ideas. A philosophy which allows for both concepts which are expressed in Scripture. Both the concept of oneness plus the concept of difference. Both are taken into consideration very nicely. But it's only in the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya that this is there. Otherwise, of course, in the impersonalist philosophies, it's not there at all. And even in the other personal philosophies, we find that the picture is not clear. The picture is not clear. Like you may have seen pictures of Madhvacharya, very heavily built person, sitting with his hand raised, showing two fingers. So, his philosophy is dualism, that there are two, not just one, two, the living being and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're two, they're not one. He stressed this difference, so he's known for that, actually. But actually it's not exactly like that. Of course, the two are there, but in another sense the two are one. But Madhvacharya, he didn't really, of course he accepted that internally, but he didn't express that concept. He was always stressing duality, the two. And he wasn't really dealing with the side of the oneness. On the other hand, you get Ramanujacharya, whose philosophy, in many ways we would say that in many ways it's the closest of all those philosophies to the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, but it's not quite the same. His philosophy is called Vishishtadvaita, or qualified monism. Actually, it's a monistic philosophy, but it's a qualified monistic philosophy. Sometimes it's called concrete monism. Concrete in the sense that you have a piece of concrete, and very clearly it's one piece of concrete. That is its nature. It's one piece, one unit. But if you look very carefully within the concrete, you'll be able to see various of the ingredients which have been combined to form that one piece. You'll see pieces of stone. You'll see the grains of sand. Isn't it? That's a fact. But actually they're existing now within that one entity, and we understand them in terms of being that one entity, different ingredients of the one entity concrete. So, Ramanujacharya's philosophy is that we are part of God. We are part of the body of God. Like he has his finger. So we may be parts of that finger as such. Directly parts of the form of God. So it's called qualified monism. Actually it's a monistic philosophy. Therefore it's called Vishishtadvaita. A philosophy which is Advaita, non-dual. But it's Vishisht, it's qualified. Not simply like Shankaracharya, pure monism. So, these two types of Vaishnava philosophy, of course Ramanujacharya, he was the first of the Vaishnava Acharyas to appear after Shankaracharya. So therefore his philosophy is the closest to Shankaracharya's, although it is a personal philosophy, a Vaishnava philosophy. But his philosophy and Madhva's philosophy, they're not complete. They're not complete. Madhva is saying there are two, So we also accept, yes, there are two. There are many, actually. There are so many. Nityo, Nityana, Chaitanas, Chaitananam. There's an unlimited number of eternal living entities. Each one is an individual, and including the Supreme One, the Supreme, singular living entity. They're all individual. But there is a oneness there, that Krishna is spiritual and we are spirituals. Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha, we are also Satchidananda Vigraha. In quality we are the same, but in quantity there's a great difference. And Krishna, he is the energetic and we are the energy. Not, as Ramanujacharya says, that we are part of his being as such, of his person. No, we are his energy. He is himself. He is the personality of Godhead, and we are his energy. But in his case, because he's such an extraordinary person, his energy means persons in this context. So, in the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, we get this very nice synthesis of these two apparently contradictory philosophical concepts which occur quite frequently throughout the Vedic scriptures, even here in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and which confuse so many people. Therefore you find, in fact we have had little debates generally with impersonalists, and they are very happy to quote whatever verses they know. Unfortunately these days generally they don't know so many, but they may know a few slogans. From the monistic point of view, they're very happy to present those and say to us, so there, this is Shastra. But then we reply with some other verses which express the difference, and they don't know what to say. They have nothing to say. They have nothing to say. Or if they have something to say, like Shankaracharya himself even, he said that in many ways what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is very nice, but some parts are wrong. That was his idea. That Krishna, there are so many statements that he makes in Bhagavad Gita, and they're very nice. That means, of course, statements which they're more from the side of oneness. But the other statements in which Krishna is quite clearly stating the difference, Shankaracharya, he came right out and said that actually Krishna is wrong here. And we have another idea, and we will substitute our idea for these ideas where Krishna is wrong. In fact, this point is made, those of you who have read Chaitanya Charitamrita would have seen, when Lord Chaitanya is discussing with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya brings up this very point, that how can Shankaracharya say that Lord Krishna is a good authority and we should follow him in some respects, but in other respects he's wrong. Either he knows or he doesn't know. If he's mistaken, then why accept anything that he says? As Vaishnavas, we are always very careful to see before we accept someone or some statements, some source of knowledge as being valid. We want to see, is the source free from the four defects of the conditioned soul? Is the source of this knowledge free from imperfect senses? The tendency to make mistakes, free from illusion, free from the cheating propensity. And if the source is not free, then we won't accept. So we accept the Vedas, and we accept Krishna in those terms. Otherwise we won't accept. But Shankaracharya, he said that we will accept some, but not the rest. And Lord Chaitanya challenged Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya on that point. And that was accepted, actually. So, both of them, therefore the Vaishnavas, when they come across these two types of statements, they don't become confused. Whereas generally other people, they do become confused. So how is it that one could really get the right idea, how to see these statements correctly? This is discussed in Tattva Sandarbha by Srila Jiva Goswami. We'll be trying to teach a course on that in a few months, and then we'll go through all these things elaborately. But Jiva Goswami makes a very valid point. Actually, it's an undefeatable point as far as this particular question is concerned. The question is, how do we know what is the real message of the Vedas? Is it oneness or is it difference? Or what is it? Is it just whatever you want? You can just choose as you like. What is the real message? So Jiva Goswami says that you don't need to read all the Vedic literatures and try and figure out what is being stressed most. How many statements are there which are saying that it's one? How many statements are there which are saying that it's different? You don't need to do that. So what do you need to do? He makes a very nice point. What you need to do is understand the mind of the author. Understand the actual conception of the author. And then all the various statements that he makes will fit in to that context very nicely. So what is the mind of the author? That is explained, that is expressed in the 7th chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That Srila Vyasadeva, having completed all the Vedic literatures, including even Vedanta Sutra, was feeling dissatisfied. And he was wondering how, why is it that I'm feeling dissatisfied? I've completed all knowledge. And I've come to and I've realized the essence of all knowledge via Vedanta Sutra. So why am I not satisfied? Then, fortunately, the description is there in the 4th and 5th chapters of the first canto and 6th chapter. Fortunately, Narada Muni came on the scene and explained that you are dissatisfied because you haven't explained, you haven't elaborated clearly the position of Krishna. You haven't established that, and you haven't realized that sufficiently. Not sufficiently. Not that Vyasadeva was an impersonalist, but he had not realized sufficiently who is Krishna. What is the relationship of everything with Krishna? So Narada indirectly told him that you write Srimad Bhagavatam, but actually what he told him is, you need further realization. So Narada instructed him to take up a certain process of meditation in Bhakti Yoga, and then said that you'll realize the real highest essence, and when you realize that and express that, then you'll feel satisfied. So, Vyasadeva then practiced that meditation. That's described, I think it's the 4th verse of the 7th chapter of first canto. Bhakti yogena manasi. He engaged his mind in meditation in bhakti yoga. On the instruction of Narada. Samyak pranihate male. And then what? Apasyat purusham purnam. Then he realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purusham purnam plus mayam tad upashritam. Mayam chatad upashritam. He also realized what Maya really is. And what was Maya doing? Hiding in the shadows behind the Supreme Lord. So then, on the basis of that realization, he felt completely satisfied because that was in keeping with the real eternal nature of the living being. So he felt satisfied in his position in relation to the Lord. And when he expressed that in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, then whoever, the audience, whoever hears it, they also become satisfied. So his realization was that he realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also realized the jiva. The next verse says, yaya samohita jiva. That he realized the jiva also as being some mohita in illusion under the influence of Maya. So these were all different things that he realized, separate entities. So this is the mind. This is like the heart of Vyasadeva. This is his understanding which he is presenting, particularly in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami gives this as a very simple solution, how we can get the right focus on these different statements by understanding what is the idea of Srila Vyasadeva. What is he trying to express? That everything is one with, but different from, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are his energy, he is the energetic. And just like the sun and the sunshine, in one sense they're not different. You can't separate the two. You can't take the sunshine away from the sun, and you can't have the sun without the sunshine. So oneness is there. But when you have the sunshine, you can't say that you actually have that glow, the sun planet itself. So difference is there also. This is a very nice understanding, which is given by Lord Chaitanya and given by our Vaishnava Acharyas, the correct perspective. So we don't need to do any mental sort of calisthenics to try and twist our minds around certain statements and avoid them and accept other statements very nicely. Mental jugglery, anything of that sort. We don't have to. We can get the clear understanding. What is what? We are the energy, he is the energetic, so there's oneness and difference. So any comments or questions?
I thought, I was under the impression that the Vedas were existing before Srila Vyasadeva, and then he just compiled the Vedas. In fact, in the Isha Upanishad, there was one Veda, and Vyasadeva separated. And then there are the Vedas personified, but you said Jiva Goswami is saying that Vyasadeva is the author, but in the sense that he's the compiler.
Yeah.
So since he has a knowledge of all the Vedas.
It's in that sense. He's the editor. The Vedas certainly were existing, and Srimad Bhagavatam was also existing. Jiva Goswami explains in Tattvasandarbha that it's existing. Bhagavatam is existing in Brahma Loka, in the form of 1 billion verses, and Ananta Shesh in the spiritual realm, he's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam all the time. But when Vyasadeva edited or compiled all the Vedas, then he compiled them as he wanted to, in the context that he wanted to present them. So it's not that. So therefore he's called Veda Vyas, or he's referred to as being the author, the authority, the Acharya. So his final version of what is the message of the Vedas is Srimad Bhagavatam, which he compiled as he wanted to.
I've also heard that Shankaracharya considers it Vyasadeva, actually it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Shankaracharya considers it Vyasadeva Veda states.
Yes.
So it's actually, that's the cheating, when you have a conclusion, instead of just saying this is my philosophy, you come up with your own, write your own philosophy, but you say it's from the Vedas, and you accept what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada said that Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's book. These people, they have their own ideas, but they want to use Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle because it's already popular. So they know that if we present our own ideas using the vehicle of Bhagavad Gita, then our ideas will become popular. But this is very dishonest. If they have their own ideas, what? Jiva Goswami says, not only that, but then Shukadev added to it according to his realization. And what was his realization? It's expressed in the verse, Atmaramas Chamunayo, Negranta Apyurukrame, Kuravanti Ahaitakim Bhaktim, Itambhuta Gunahari. That even people who are liberated, Atmarama, they're actually Brahman-realized souls, even they become attracted to the subjects talk about Krishna, because Krishna has transcendental qualities. So, you know, there's like a second sort of thrust of Jiva Goswami. That not only is it a matter of Vyas having had a higher realization, which is Krishna conscious, but Shukadev, who was a monist, he also had a similar realization, and therefore he elaborated further, he contributed further to Srimad Bhagavatam. Any other questions or comments? Let's wait. It does, a little. Let's wait until we do the course on Tapasandava. It's very interesting how, it's very nice how it's presented. Ramananda Raghu? Oh, no. Well, it's an illusory form. It doesn't really exist. It's just to help certain types of people grasp the idea that behind this great universe there must be a person. That's how Prabhupada expresses it. That actually there is really no such thing as such. But it's more like just to help these people. Impersonalists and people who are excessively materially attached, more than average. Any other questions or comments? That's an interesting question. How come Ramanuja Madhva and other great devotees, very great devotees, we would accept that they're pure devotees, they know the Lord, how come they come out with these philosophies which are not really correct? So it's explained in Navadvip Dharma Mahatmya, which is written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He explains that actually all of those, the acharyas who are the heads of the four sampradayas, Ramanuja, Nimbarka, Vishnu Swami, and Madhva, he says they all, because they all went on pilgrimage during the course of their lives, and they went all over at different times, all over India. So they all went to Navadvip. And when, at different times, of course. So when each one of them was in Navadvip, Lord Chaitanya revealed himself to them and told them that you teach this philosophy and you don't explain the real philosophy. I'm going to do that later. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that they knew. They knew exactly what was the real truth. But because they accepted that they had a certain mission given to them by the Lord to express another, like a different version, so they stuck to that. But because they're such great devotees, so much empowered by the Lord, even though their philosophies are not quite right, still they were so effective in establishing Vaishnavism. Very, very effective, actually. Any other questions or comments? Ramanuja Brahma.
And the essence of all the Vaishnava philosophy is called prapanna, which means surrender to the Lord. That's where they all agree. You have to surrender to the Lord.
Yeah. Even there, there's a little difference. I mean, this is getting a bit technical. Ramanujacharya said that, I mean, the Ramanujacharya said, of course this is also the Ramanujacharya, but he's Das, the Adi Ramanujacharya. He said that there is a difference between the concept of surrender as expressed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 66. There is a difference between that and this prapanna, even though in a sense they're sort of synonymous. So that difference was that surrender is a means of achieving that prapanna, which is like, it's a state of liberation actually. Because their goal is liberation. And bhakti is more like a means to that liberation, although it exists also in the liberated state. But actually, the goal of being liberated is particularly prominent. And that is more like what's included in the concept of prapanna. So I think we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
This is a very safe place, and I always feel grateful to not only be hearing about Krishna, but to know who's telling me. And if I listen like that, Prabhupada will bring me to into the Leela, and in a sense I'll leave only sitting at his lotus feet, and I'll look where he wants me to look, into the Leela. But the passage that was read had very much his voice, instructive voice, about the power of chanting and just, of course, the language. Some of the phrases. Were very much his phrasing and important instructions about chanting. So that's my candid response, although I'm asking you to feel the senses. I'm just at the entrance hearing the teller. So, Madhu, what about you so far?
I was thinking, you're recounting how the demoniac forces, which is ghosts, like Bhutan was sent out to kill all the children, and that sense of fear that would be among the people at a time like that. I can remember being small, maybe not so small, walking in the dark in the countryside, like an island with the trees, and like you imagine as you're going past various places that there's a... You feel a little afraid sometimes, maybe there are ghosts there. And then we had a farm in Ireland, a devotee farm, and there was a killing that took place in one part, and everybody said that part of the forest was haunted. And at night, I still wouldn't like to go around that... Nobody actually liked to go around that area. So there was a little fear, but then I was thinking, well, now I'm a little more... we tend to be a little more educated or sophisticated. Maybe some don't believe in ghosts, but there are demoniac forces even now in a city. When we analyze, there are so many causes for fear, for being mugged as a real one when you're living in the city. Who wants to travel in the New York subway at night? So there are still fears, no matter how sophisticated we are, they're very real. And this is something that devotees had at that time and devotees have now, that even in a fearful situation we've immediately got Krishna to return to. And of course these inhabitants of Vrindavan would do that a lot more naturally than I can, but yet Krishna is there. I know even in any fearful situation I can return to.